Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. Brought to you by HelloFresh. From the right today, we have...
DJ McGuire, a progressive conservative from Suffolk, Virginia.
And from the left of the aisle, we have...
Rebecca Kushmider, a progressive feminist from Kensington, Maryland.
And I'm Kevin Kelton in Los Angeles, a passionate moderate on the political spectrum. Welcome, everybody, and we want to mention our website, moreperfectunionpodcast.com, where you can find commentaries and our host bios. Anybody put up a new piece since last week?
I sure did. I wrote today reflecting on the conversation about political rhetoric affecting political action and what it's doing to the fabric of society.
Wait, you seem to think that political rhetoric has something to do with our politics today?
It's weird. This is just a theory I'm floating, and you know, I'm not sure anybody's going to buy into it. We'll see how this goes. Let me know what you think.
Okay. Well, this is the week where we've had a lot of sadness in the news, including the horrific shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. And gosh, what can we say about it? Whereas we usually are talking about the role of guns in gun violence, this week we seem to be talking about the role of politics and political campaigns in gun violence.
The gun conversation, we've had it so many times. This is, you know, I haven't read much on the background of the person who committed the shooting. In fact, I don't even know his name. But I will probably hear all of the same basic facts of his past that we hear in all these cases, that he has a record of abuse, that he has a record of run-ins with the police, that there are a number of red flags that should have prevented him from getting a gun. Were we more careful about such things? But one of the things that I was pointing out in my article today is that these very high profile crimes happen no matter what. You can point to them as far back as the Clinton administration, the first school shooting in Columbine. Madmen exist. There is very little we can do to stop the truly deranged mind. They will latch onto anything. I think I posted on DJ's wall this week that Mark David Chapman, before shooting John Lennon, cited The Catcher in the Rye as his source. So that's not the low-hanging fruit of what we need to change. What we need to change is the lower-level bigotries, the person-on-person verbal crimes, emotional crimes, the policies that are about creating us against them ethos. And we all have power over that. We can either stop ourselves from committing it, or we can become active bystanders and allies who don't allow those around us to commit these, you know, death by a thousand paper cuts kind of acts.
Honestly, I think it's a bit darker than that. I mean, we do know some things about the shooter in Pittsburgh. We know, for example, that he was a raving anti-Semite. But we also know that the Jews that particularly upset him were the Jews that helped refugees, in particular the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. He railed against them. He railed against the caravan, which tells me that he was probably egged on by all the anti-caravan rhetoric that has been going on coming out of Donald Trump and his acolytes. I can't remember the name of who put this out, but what he said was you can't necessarily blame Trump at all for people being crazy. They are crazy. You can, however, ask whether they are pushing the nonsense so hard that they are encouraging the crazies to actually act.
Well, that is in a way blaming, and I'm not saying that you're blaming, but you are saying that if they weren't pushing it so hard, maybe this wouldn't have happened.
I guess partially I am blaming them. I'm saying that they are at least partially responsible. And the fact of the matter is, political rhetoric has been out of control for quite some time. But at the same time, while there has been some on the left and some on the right, I think it is clearly worse on the right these days than it is on the left. And it hurts me to say that, because I still consider myself on the right. But the fact of the matter is, when Donald Trump is out there day in and day out spewing this nonsense, when Fox Business Channel puts on the air a guy on Lou Dobbs who insinuates that the State Department is Jewish controlled, it is going to encourage people who we should not encourage to do things like this.
I was going to say, I do agree that Donald Trump and, you know, people who go on television and actively support Donald Trump in the way he talks have created a permission zone for people to stop trying to be their best selves, for people to give in to their basest instincts and say the things that in years prior to this would have been considered unspeakable. However, I think that there is a line that most people do not cross into actual violence. Perhaps that line is a little blurrier or a little closer to normal behavior right now than it has been in previous eras. But I also think that most of the people at a Trump rally are not going to go shoot up a synagogue. However, they might be the people who are going to yell at a person using an EBT card to pay for groceries, just stop spending my money on food I don't approve of, or something like that. That sort of interpersonal violence.
I'd like to take a moment to look at the role of social media in things like this. Now, listen, we're not mining new area here. A lot of the cable networks, a lot of the cable networks have been having the same conversation. But unlike some of the people on television, the three of us are actually avid consumers of social media. I know that a lot of the hosts maybe have their own Twitter accounts. I'm talking about, you know, the network talking heads. But I don't think that they spend as much time on Facebook or in some of the other social sites as we do. Everybody who listens to this podcast knows that several of us are in a Facebook group called Open Fire Politics. 10,000 plus people are in this group. There's a lot of groups like that on Facebook. It's not just ours, where people come to discuss the news of the day, and things can get very heated. And I'm wondering, you know, I was thinking for a while that this is that national conversation that everybody has been saying for 20 years. We need to have a national conversation about X, Y, and Z. And I thought, well, Facebook and these groups and maybe Reddit and Gab and some of the other platforms actually are that national conversation with the politicians taken out of the mix so the people can talk to each other. I think that's the good aspect of it. But I'm wondering, are we now turning into a self consuming entity that is just spewing, I mean, it's eating up the good discourse and spewing out venom?
I'm actually going to push back on that slightly, based oddly enough on Twitter, which is probably the most of all of the social, well, outside of Gab, which is just out there in space somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't Gab basically exist to give really radical right-wing people a place to hang out where no liberals are going to come find them?
I think
like,
so.
Like, I think that's the whole mission of Gab.
That seems to be. That seems to be what Gab is for. But the one thing I've noticed I'm starting to see more on Twitter is Twitter threads, where people are essentially using Twitter to – it's Twitter in essay form. And it's essentially – it's multiple tweets strung together. And you're starting to see – or I would consider as some fairly thoughtful commentary. I see it particularly on trade. I see it in some political analysis and such. And I'm not saying that Twitter itself, that Twitter doesn't have any problems. Of course, Twitter has problems. But the fact of the matter is Twitter is, I would say, a better medium today than it was last year, let alone 2 years ago or such.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. I think there have been distinct improvements in the way the cream floats to the top on Twitter, and you can find really interesting commentary there. And what DJ is saying about threaded tweets is true. That's a functionality they introduced, and some people have made really excellent use of it. But you can also find the worst of the worst on Twitter. Like some absolute troll account this week I had to report because, I don't know, it was clearly a troll account, and they were telling me to go commit suicide.
Well, yeah.
So I told them they looked pretty and their hair smelled good. It was pretty funny.
But I think in terms of the rest of social media, I mean, social media in general is essentially what happens when everybody gets to send a letter to the editor. And there's no newspaper editor to say, okay, that's too crazy, that's too inflammatory, that's too nuts, none of that can go in our paper. That gatekeeper is gone. And we are now recognizing, I think what social media is social media is reflective of what we are as a society. And we are recognizing that what we are as a society is not nearly as nice as we thought we were.
No. And a friend of mine said this right after the 2016 election, that white supremacy, sometimes violent authoritarian white supremacy, has been part of the American fabric since its inception. The earliest settlers of Virginia were slave owners. They wrote the Virginia Articles of Incorporation to include slavery overtly. Everything that happened up until the Civil War was to create a two-tiered society in which white landowners were above everybody else and had complete authority over them. There have been times where we've been more polite about it, where people have kept their feelings about it hidden, but we are in a period of what I'm calling open carry hate right now, and everybody's prejudices are right out where we can see them. I don't know if that's better or worse than all of it happening behind closed doors, but I don't think any of it's new.
Okay.
There was an old saying I remember reading, I'm not sure remember where I read this, but there was an old saying among African Americans of the 20th century: in the South, at least you knew where you stood.
Yeah.
And the idea being that in the rest of the country, racism was still there; it was just usually hidden under a bushel. In 2017, it's not under a bushel anymore, or 2018, whatever year this is. I've clearly had a lot to drink already.
Who can tell? We're all in a daze most of the time.
Yeah, this is, you know, we're getting a better idea of where we stand, and we're getting a better. We are now recognizing, all the things that. Let me try this again. They're all crawling out from the rocks they were under, because they think it's their time. Because Donald Trump's election gives them the opportunity and the ability and the support to come out into the open.
Okay, so let's talk about elections. We had to acknowledge the Tree of Life shooting, and there's not a lot of joy that we could share discussing that topic. But let's move on to things that are slightly more joyous, like the midterms. So, yes, for 2 years now, Donald Trump has created an America that seems dysfunctional. People will debate that for decades and maybe centuries to come. But right now we have a chance to maybe, you know, put a little ding in this new world order that Donald Trump has created, especially with the stock market down now 10% over the last few weeks. That's an official correction. And I'm wondering, do you think that this might help dash Trump's hopes for the midterms?
Well, I think it certainly shifted attention away from what the Republicans want this election to be about, which is, as I think Gingrich himself put it, Kavanaugh and the caravan. It reminded everybody that there are, including Republicans, that there are, in fact, other issues out there. There's the matter of stewardship for the economy. GDP growth is now off. It's now fallen back below 4% again. And in fact, the 3.5% roughly that came in over the last quarter was largely due to consumer spending and government spending. Business investment is off in response to all of the tariffs. The stock market is responding to the effects of the tariffs and such. And I think it should give the voters pause as to whether Donald Trump should really have unchecked political power.
Right. And there's so many factors aside from turnout, including voter repression.
Yeah, the voter suppression, the gerrymandering.
And every day you see new polls on television telling you the difference in enthusiasm is such and such, or the difference in whether people want a Democratic House or a Republican House is such and such. But national polls, just like in a presidential election, national polls can be very deceptive, because where those votes are concentrated, especially in the key, you know, swing elections that coming up 10 days from now, that is going to make the difference. And looking at national polls, I think can give Democrats a lot more confidence than maybe we should have going in. Rahm Emanuel had a really interesting quote this week. He said, "I happen to think that this is a blue wave election with a red undertow." which means be careful because we can get swept out by the undertow.
Yeah, and I agree with Rahm. Rahm is actually very good at running campaigns and getting people elected. But, I mean, you know, we've got major voter enthusiasm here in Maryland. We're up, I don't know, we have more than doubled our early vote numbers from 2016 for the comparable period of early voting days we've had. And a lot of those are Democrats. We need to get 1 million Democrats out in my state if we want to beat Larry Hogan so far. Well, the last numbers I saw, we'd already gotten 100,000 out in the first 2 days of early voting. Is that going to keep up? I don't know. I've been doing everything I can.
I'm now falling into the school of thought that this whole early voting thing, the analysis of early voting,
is ridiculous. Quite
deceptive because it's cannibalizing votes that would have happened on election day.
Exactly. It's not indicative.
We really won't know whether this early vote surge means anything until election day has come and gone itself. I remember in 2014, everyone talking about the early vote numbers, Democrats in particular, because the early vote numbers from 2014 were better than 2010. And what actually happened was, again, they were cannibalizing the election day vote. Where Republican early vote is up, that may also be cannibalizing on election day votes. We really don't know until election day comes and goes.
But that doesn't mean we should dismiss early voting as a concept in general, because I think it does. It is a good counter to voter suppression.
That's not what I was referring to. I wasn't saying that early voting itself is bad.
No. And I know what you're saying. I don't want anyone listening to this to think that we're being casual about early voting, because I think it is one of the great initiatives in making voting more equitable. Because if you are a family with two working adults and children who need care, and potentially your school district closes because schools are used as polling places, then election day becomes a giant freaking hassle. And having alternate times where you and your spouse don't have to try and vote on the same day, where you don't have to arrange childcare in order to vote, where you can, you know, where you can get weekday transportation options, all of that is really outstanding. And I think more states should really be exploring expanded early voting and expanded early voting locations.
Right. And if you've got that early voting ballot at your house, if you were already signed up for it and they mailed it to you, don't wait for election day. Don't wait for the kids to have a flu and be home from school that day so you get, you know, tethered to the house. Use that ballot, vote early. We were not suggesting that people should not be voting early. Now, as you guys will well remember, last week I spent about 2/3 of the episode on a soapbox. And it made
me
look
taller,
smarter.
Tall.
And because of it was quality soap, I smelled better too.
Yeah. And it made your hair shiny and your skin clear.
And my skin clearer. I'm getting back on my soapbox this week, but I'm going to do it by quoting none other than comedian and actor Jim Carrey, who made quite a rousing speech in his acceptance speech at the BAFTA Awards this weekend. That's the British Academy Awards. Jim Carrey got some kind of an award this weekend, and he used it as a platform to talk politics. And he, you know, is obviously a very liberal person, but he said something that I think in 5 words encapsulates the argument that people should vote Democrat. And this is my pitch. I'm going to take his words and I'm going to refocus the meaning of them. Let's say you're out there and you're a conservative, but you listen to us, even though we tend to lean a little bit more to the left, maybe a lot more to the left. And we haven't convinced you that socialized medicine or, you know, Medicare for all is the answer. We haven't convinced you that Donald Trump is as bad as we think he is. And you're thinking, I still don't know at the end of the day whether to vote for a Democratic candidate for governor or a Republican candidate for governor. I still don't know whether to vote for my Democratic choice for House and Senate or to go with the GOP choice. Carrie boiled it down to 5 very simple words that I think should sway anyone who's still on the fence. And those 5 words are, let's bring back the balance. I think we'll all agree that democracy works best when one party does not control all the levers of power. And right now, the Republicans own the White House, the Senate, the Congress, more governorships, and more state legislators is what I meant to say. And frankly, they probably control the Supreme Court. So if for no other reason, consider voting Democrat, because we need to balance that out, because one party in power is a road to fascism and other bad things. And with that, I'm going to step down to the ground.
And I'm going to applaud both you and Jim Carrey, because I think you're correct. In fact, there have been studies that I think I read a bazillion years ago about people preferring divided government. They like a Democratic Congress when there's a Republican in the White House and vice versa, that they feel like, you know, there's more balance in what gets done. It's better for compromise. In recent times, it's led to a whole lot of gridlock, but I think it's also slowed down some very bad ideas. You know, we all wish the good ideas would happen faster, but it's nice when the bad ideas get the brakes put on them.
Yeah, I remember Nate Silver actually mentioned something about why one of the reasons why they over 538, why they are giving the Democrats such heavy odds to win the House, even though it's a bit of a long road to hoe for the reasons that we've talked about earlier, is that he was saying that a lot in his mind, a lot of the reasons why Republicans actually won the House in 2016 was because a lot of voters expected Hillary Clinton to win and voted Republican for Congress as a way to block her, as a way to ensure divided government. Then they woke up the next morning, they found out Donald Trump had won, and what they ended up with was united government instead. Those kind of voters, if they come out in 2018, are almost certain to vote Democrat because divided government is what they prefer, and that's what they thought they were doing in 2016. And now they'll try to make sure they get it in 2018.
From your lips to God's ears. And you know, when we're talking about balance, you know where else balance is important? A balanced diet. And that's why...
HelloFresh.
Excellent segue.
We, at the More Perfect Union, are proud to be sponsored by HelloFresh. And you know, there's something for everyone with HelloFresh's selections. You've got the balance because there's three plans to choose from: the classic, the veggie, and the family plan if you have to feed more than two people. HelloFresh wants you to rediscover the excitement of cooking. Enjoy not having to plan a dinner or worry about gathering ingredients week after week and maybe not having the exact mix of spices to pull off a recipe that you find in a recipe book or on a website or in the New York Times. With HelloFresh, everything you need comes in one package straight to your doorstep, and it's a very simple recipe. It's usually a six-step recipe with sub-bullets, but it really is simple and convenient. It's delivered right to your door in a recyclable, insulated package. They have lots of one-pot recipes for seriously speedy cooking and minimal cleanup. And there are many benefits of subscribing, so you can keep enjoying HelloFresh week after week. And DJ, there's a reason that you specifically like HelloFresh, isn't there?
Yes, there is. In addition to everything you've mentioned, HelloFresh also has a wine subscription service where for about $90 a month, you get six bottles of some of the very best wines that are out there. My wife is particularly fond of that. And I am too. And that's another way that HelloFresh can deliver enjoyment of consumption to your door.
I really need to get on that.
When I got my first set of meals, and you know, at that time I was making a lot of crock pot meals for my kids, and they call them crap pot meals.
Oh, that's mean.
But you know, I was looking for a way to feed my kids home-cooked meals that I could handle. So I get the HelloFresh box, and my first dish that I made, actually the first dish that I made was a Monterey burger dish. But the second dish I made that week was a pork larange. And it, you know, and there was this great sauce. I like sweet orange sauces. And it was great with vegetables and a side dish of sweet potato fries. And I made this whole thing, and my son, I didn't have both my kids that week, but my youngest son really loved it. And you could have that same experience with your family. So for a total of $60 off your first order, that's $20 off your first three boxes, visit HelloFresh.com/MorePerfect60. That's our promo code, MorePerfect60. So go to their website, HelloFresh.com, then put a slash and add MorePerfect60. And it's like receiving six free meals. That's HelloFresh.com, and then enter the promo code MorePerfect60, one word, all lowercase, so you can start today.
The More Perfect Union.
Now available on iTunes and Stitcher.
Okay, let's get back to the week in the news. Pipe bombs!
I'm hungry now. Maybe you should come to my house and make pork l'orange.
Okay, just get me the air ticket. I'll be there. So pipe bombs should have been the big news of the week before that horrible shooting. But 11 pipe bombs sent out.
14. It was 14. Yeah, it was 14
pipe bombs. 11 targets. Is that right?
It's something like that. I believe it's 14 separate targets, although CNN repeats.
Well, Maxine Waters was twice.
Yeah, and there were a couple people that were care of CNN.
Right.
So this person was not a particularly well-organized individual when it came to locating his targets. And we don't know that there aren't more bombs currently in the mail because the suspect isn't cooperating, according to authorities.
DJ, does this tie into the whole white nationalist movement, or was this guy separate from that? Was he just an angry conservative, angry at liberals? What's going on there? We know that his van had all of this pro-Trump, anti-CNN writing on it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of this?
Yeah, I actually just consider this more. I use the overall term white supremacist terrorism, and I think this is a part of it. Donald Trump has essentially listed his enemies. He called them enemies rather than opponents, and this guy followed up on it and said, "Okay, well, I'm just going to send the bombs and blow them up." Thankfully, none of them actually detonated, so no one got hurt. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's just a close call. And it is another example of the emboldened supremacists who now think they can get away and do stuff like this because Donald Trump is in the White House.
And that's absolutely true. This guy definitely had sort of a cult obsession with Donald Trump. He even seemed to like Mike Pence a whole lot, and he doesn't get a lot of press. So Mike Pence maybe should feel special. Not sure. But he, as I'm understanding it, and I haven't read about this since about Thursday or Friday, whenever he was arrested, this guy has a record with police and has attempted to make or send bombs in the past. So I think he falls into the category of a guy who would have latched on to anything. And Trump is a permission zone for people like this. But this guy was really quite disturbed and possibly would have found a reason to send bombs to people regardless of who was in the White House.
I'm not sure I fully agree. And I don't want to be one of those people that's going to blame this whole thing on Donald Trump. And yet I guess I'm about to because, I mean, when you look at the list of people that he wrote to, every single one of them has been targeted by Trump with a tweet or a mention in a rally speech, usually more than once, and usually in very nasty or insulting terms. So, listen, we all know Trump is who he is. He's not going to change. I don't expect Trump to become John F. Kennedy or Barack Obama or Ronald Reagan anytime in the future. Nor do I think, frankly, he wants to.
I don't even expect Trump to become Dick frickin' Cheney.
Right.
That's right. Maybe the best we could hope for.
Listen, Trump is going to do what Trump is going to do. That doesn't mean that we can't label what's happening as a function of this kind of politics, because Donald Trump will come and go. He may go in 2020. He may go in 2024. He may become king, you know, president for life, or he may have one or two terms and still be some kind of a presence after his presidency because of the power of Twitter and other social media. But he will come and go. My fear is that what's getting baked into the cake is a new kind of politics based on his success that is going to continue to, light a fuse for people like this guy and the shooting nutcase. And we're going to just see more violence in this country instead of
us. Well, I think Tom, the guy I was referring to earlier was actually Tom Nichols, and I actually have his tweet here in front of me. The question isn't whether MAGA van guy is nuts, since he clearly is. That's not the president's fault. The better question is whether the White House and the Trump media complex is pushing the crazy juice so hard that it's making unstable people more likely to be violent. I think that's the real question that we are facing here. Not is Trump at all making people crazy. Is Trump?
Absolutely, you're
right. Is Trump at all making the crazies more violent by giving them excuses to be violent? That's the problem we're facing, I think.
Yeah, that is
the problem we're facing, and we're facing it on multiple levels. But I, as an observer of gun violence, as a person who has worked as a volunteer within the gun violence prevention community, I can tell you that these various mass shooters, and I'm putting the bomber in the same category as mass shooters, they list all kinds of completely batshit reasons, many of which don't make any sense. So they are almost a separate category of violent offender. They would find any excuse. Dylan Klebold and Eric...
They didn't need Donald Trump to do it.
The young man who shot Gabby Giffords, the guy who shot up a showing of Batman.
In Aurora, Colorado.
Right,
yes.
They all found reasons. And that has happened since the dawn of America, which is unfortunate. But the deranged madman will become deranged and find any reason. That is something that is internal to people. But the other forms of interpersonal violence that are occurring are absolutely the fault of Trump. I think this is an externality to Trump that we are attributing to him, not 100% mistakenly, but maybe less than we would like to think as people who really, really freaking hate Donald Trump, just as a general rule.
Okay. But here's my – let me give an example of what I'm concerned about. This morning – I'm watching the news, and they criticized Donald Trump because in his rally speech last night after the Pittsburgh shooting, he said something to the effect of, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's going to be close to his quote. He said he was talking about, you know, people targeting Jews and trying to kill Jews and the growth of anti-Semitism in this country. And he said, you would think that we're beyond that by this point, but I guess not. And then they cut to some spokesman for the ADL, or the Jewish Defense League, and they cut to some spokesman for the Jewish community. And he said, you know, isn't that awful that the president of the United States doesn't realize that there's still anti-Semitism in this country? Well, I don't think that that's what Trump was saying, and I don't think that's what Trump thinks. And maybe it wasn't the most artful way to express what he was feeling, but it wasn't that far off to say you would think in this day and age. And yet they jump on him for everything that comes out of his mouth. And frankly, this is what Trump has been talking about a lot lately. And I'm going to say this with maybe some good reason. I think the media has gotten a little too obsessive with jumping down his throat for everything that comes out of his mouth. I actually think this is what happened with Dick Cheney. A person gets to a point where when everyone craps on them for every breath they take and every thought they express, at a certain point, that person realizes they are never going to win you over, and they basically say, F you, and they become more radicalized. So I think the problem maybe isn't that we're radicalizing the alt-right or the alt-left. Maybe we are radicalizing the president.
We are radicalizing the president. I think that quote sounds like it. Remember that episode of The West Wing where the guy who was going to run against Bartlett says,
yes,
boy crime, I don't know. That was a boy crime, I don't know moment where like he just didn't have anything to say and he probably should have just said, boy, may their members be a blessing and moved on. But he can't keep his mouth shut.
Right. But again, we know that the man speaks off the cuff. I really can't watch his rallies because I find them so offensive. But this is what he does.
Yeah, this is what he does. And I think to non-Jewish people or people who aren't close to the Jewish community, the degree of anti-Semitism out there is a bit of a surprise. You don't know that that still exists. You don't know that the word Rothschild is a dog whistle or the word Soros. People are awful.
And that's
people,
the theme of
people
tonight's
are
show.
Awful. People are and awful. Nobody seems to have, you know, nobody's got good manners anymore.
Hey, so let's talk about this other scandal in the news. Now that I said we should leave the president alone, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, go right back to him.
Let's talk about his use of non-secure cell phones.
Oh, my God.
You know, Barack Obama, they took, the Secret Service said to him, you can't have one. And he didn't like it, but he listened. And Trump went the other way. And now he's defending his use of cell phones and saying, my conversations are boring. And even though the Russians and the Chinese are clearly tapping into them, they're not getting any real, you know, sensitive information from it. Meanwhile, the Chinese are admitting to people that they are using the conversations that they are intercepting between Trump and his friends. They say, we are using that to adjust our policy towards the United States and try to make arguments that we think will appeal to Trump based on his private conversations and what he's told friends is meaningful to him.
Well, wasn't he on Twitter in the middle of the night saying, no, the story was boring and it's wrong and I don't use an iPhone, but it was like tagged Twitter for iPhone.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, have you noticed that whenever a story comes out that he doesn't like, he calls it boring?
Yeah, he doesn't know a lot of adjectives.
Huckabee Sanders has done that a few times too.
Yeah, no. Like I say, they don't know a lot of adjectives. Vocabulary was not their top subject in school. They couldn't pay nerds to teach them how to talk.
Yeah, and this also shows how much Trump just completely does not understand how anything works, including intelligence. It's not just about whether or not he's dropping secrets to the people he's talking to, but he is allowing our enemies to build a profile of him that they can use to manipulate him. And because he is dumb enough to think that he can't be manipulated, he doesn't notice when he is manipulated over and over and over and over and over and over again.
And he's the most easy person in the world to manipulate.
Of course he is.
Oh my God, we've all been watching it from day one. Like when he went on the Saudi trip in his first year in office, and they were like, here, we're going to like put your face on billboards all over town, and we're going to let you touch a glowing orb, and we're going to tell you you're pretty and you smell good. It's not hard to manipulate him. Everyone's figured it out.
Yeah, narcissists like people who like them. Or pretend to like them.
Okay, we all like that, though. Like, you don't have to be a narcissist to like people who like you. That's why we do this podcast with each other.
And here's the ultimate irony, although there probably will be one next week that's even a more ultimate irony. But as of this date in late October of 2018, the ultimate irony is Trump is using a private, non-secure cell phone for personal conversations, although he is in a high-level government capacity and acting in that capacity. Isn't that exactly what they wanted to send Hillary Clinton to jail for?
Oh, no. Oh, Kevin. Yeah, you're confused, Kevin. Hillary Clinton doesn't have a penis, so she can't use unsecured things. People with penises, they can totally do what they want. Yeah, that's how that works. Yeah. Oh, did you miss that lesson in school?
I missed that memo, but I think I think you're very right. Mm-hmm. But it's not just the fact that she doesn't have a penis, although to my knowledge, she doesn't.
Well, I haven't asked her, for being fair.
And thus was the next conspiracy theory launched. Hillary Clinton's secret penis.
I'm sorry.
Your fault, Kevin. It's all your bloody fault.
It's going to make great clickbait. I want to make sure our listeners remember this. It wasn't just that she had forwarded one or two emails that contained some quote-unquote confidential information, and that's still unclear how much and how confidential the information was that was contained in the emails that she forwarded to people. But they made a big deal of the fact that she had a couple of different cell phones. One was a BlackBerry, which I guess she liked her BlackBerry, but then she got an iPhone or something, and they said she shouldn't have been using her personal cell phone. Well, that is exactly what Donald Trump is doing now, and this after they've spent literally 2+ years yelling crooked Hillary and lock her up because of her cell phone usage, her private cell phone usage.
Nobody ever said they were consistent. This is
And the thing is, this is going to lead to the question of what Trump voters actually think of themselves and their own intellectual consistency. I could understand why a lot of people were upset at the whole email issue, although I was angrier at the State Department for letting it happen, because the State Department obviously had far more lax views of how emails should be treated than, say, the Defense Department. And in fact, I would say that most of the people who were really, really upset about Hillary Clinton's emails were people who had experience in the Defense Department who actually take electronic security fairly more seriously than anybody else in the federal government. The issue now is for those voters who really were genuinely upset at Hillary Clinton's lax view of security and the State Department's lax view of security. Okay, what are you going to do now? What are you going to do now that the person who for whom you voted to block Hillary Clinton clearly shows that he has just as much, if not more, less lack of concern for security than Hillary Clinton did? Is that now going to influence your vote, or were you in fact just using it as an excuse because you hated Hillary Clinton? That's on them, not on us.
Okay. And we got a couple of topics we want to get in before our hour is up. The Brazilian elections are happening, I think, this week, DJ.
It's today.
And
it's today.
It happened. The right-wing populace just won.
And Bolsonaro did win, which means Brazil is now going to go in a very different direction. I'm not sure it's really a better direction.
It's not.
I was trying to be nice. I mean, it was. To some extent, there were some rather unnerving parallels to our election last year. His opponent, who made it to the runoff, was the nominee of the Workers' Party, who had been governing Brazil for 13 of the last 15 years. They had a history that sort of stained the candidate who was running. But Bolsonaro, at the same time, is a complete whack job. And voters in Brazil, a majority of voters in Brazil, unlike in this country, said, you know what, we'll go with the whack job who can't be blamed for the corruption of the last 15 years. And the Workers' Party did have a lot of corruption.
Let's clarify for some of our listeners who may not be as familiar with this election. It's not just that he's a whack job. He is another right-wing authoritarian, totalitarian, who has taken power in a nation because the populist is so afraid of corruption and of crime that they would rather cede power to a totalitarian and let him clean things up. And that never works out well for a populist. For a populace. Why people do that and why they did it in America and why they seem to be doing it throughout Europe and now in South America is beyond me.
Well, isn't he the kind who wants to, like, kill gay people?
There's some of that, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's that far right. He's not, hey, small government, low taxes.
There's none of that.
Kill the gay people.
There's absolutely none of that. And it is another reminder that democracy in general and democratic cultures can be very fragile. And not just in Brazil. We're obviously experiencing that here. There is a great book from Sean Willens called The Rise of Democracy from Jefferson to Lincoln. And it talks about how the democratic culture in the 19th century America was created and how it was grown. And I think I'm going to actually start reading it again because I think it's apropos for the times. And he was talking about how it's basically dependent upon people. It's dependent upon people wanting – not only people wanting greater control over their government, but willing to be informed enough and virtuous enough to ensure that their choices move the country forward. It's that last bit that we're all having trouble with. And I fear that it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better.
So to wrap up our message for this episode now, just about a week out from the midterms, if you're a Democrat, remember, let's bring back the balance. And if you're a Republican, remember, the election is on November 9th. And with that...
We're not allowed to do that, Kevin. We're the good guys.
And with that, we want to thank everybody for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at hashtag MPU Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast and share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover how cool we are as well. And we are pretty cool. Doesn't everybody agree? Whether you're a Republican or whether you're a Democrat, everybody knows that Rebecca and DJ and Kevin and Greg are the Fab Four. We are the cool people of our times.
We're super cool.
And if you like political debate and would like to debate with us between shows, please join us in our Facebook group, Open Fire Politics. We are all there, and we would love to see and read about your thoughts there, too. With that, gang, what do you have on tap for the week before the midterms? Where are you going to be canvassing?
I will not be canvassing. I will be busy ensuring that my precinct captains have the sample ballots they need for election day. That's on tap for me this week.
I'm going to finish up my postcard campaign. I'm going to be talking to my friends and neighbors. And I also have to write a PTA newsletter, which has nothing to do with the election.
And I'm going to be out there trying to get Katie Hill elected in CA 25. Go, Katie.
Go, Katie. I think I read some postcards for Katie, actually.